remember playing one, I go to our feelings, and it's just not pleasant. We all experience things like that. How are we going to respond to those things? Let me give you a series of questions tonight. The first question is, you think about, am I thinking particularly from the let's get this from verses 1 through 5. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and sent him in the midst of them and said, verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as any children, you shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever then shall humble himself as this little child, his name is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. And whosoever shall receive one such little child in the day, receive it. Up three there. I'm not sure what the disciples had in mind when they said to Jesus, who's the greatest? I'm not sure quite what they had. The word that comes to mind, we would think of it is Christ. And what is the sure way to cause offenses? And find the sure way we hold on to offenses. Proverbs 13:10. Only by pride comes contention. What did the disciples have in mind with this question? I'm not sure. Let's think a little bit about these men. Well, then, Apostle Peter. Peter was a rather bold man, right? And he kind of was assumed to be somewhat of a rich leader. Later on, he would even be able to walk on water. I mean, he thought he was the greatest. Well, God was known to the disciples of Jesus' love. What a way he described. The disciples of Jesus' love. He was the greatest. The other disciples we all know a lot about, I think it's Matthew. Only a tax collector, maybe he can handle that better than anybody else. I don't know what they had in mind with these questions. But Jesus, as he saw them, took the opportunity to have a teaching lesson with his disciples. And he grabbed the specific object of the little child that was close by, second them to come perhaps, and he said, see this little child? We gotta be like this little child. They're never gonna get to heaven. You're never gonna understand what it means to find good news and good news. Know what it means to find the way that I'm inviting you to, Jesus says, unless you become like this little child. What does he mean by that? He says, if you prove yourself as a little child, the same as greatest in the kingdom of heaven. So we're called to humility. Just as a little child really is not such a all those things that we struggle with as adults, children struggle with too. But typically they're not too concerned about position. A little child, you're not necessarily looking for the greatest status and recognition as maybe some of us adults are more. Jesus says, become like that. Paul said to the Philippians, in Philippians 2:3, he said, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. And then Paul goes on to explain what this looks like. He says, what this looks like, it looks like Jesus, who was equal, is equal with God. And he set aside his heavenly robes, and he came to earth, and he was afflicted with pain, and then he died for us. That's what it means to esteem yourself others better than yourself, Paul writes in the context of that verse. And so, how are we doing with that? And am I humble? Am I willing to set aside the things that offend me and the roots of pride in my heart? Am I willing consider others better than myself? That's a hard one for me. I was preaching at a church one time, and after it was over, a brother was shaking hands, and there was a brother at the back. He said, that verse there, consider others better than yourself. He said, if we all do that, that would solve a lot of problems. And, you really think about that verse and ponder that for a while. That's an extremely challenging verse. What we're talking about tonight in the context of the family. You know, we might say, what does it really matter if I hold on to the fences? What does it really matter if I don't do well? Can I still be a good parent? Can I still shepherd my children? And the answer is no. You know, a prideful heart struggles to connect well with others. And it's going to be the same with our spouse, with our children. We're really going to struggle to connect well when there's pride in the heart. If we consider ourselves better than surface the connection process. There needs to be humility in our lives. If we want to connect deeply, emotionally well with others. First question was, am I humble? Secondly, the next question is have I been offended? And we already said that we've all been offended at some point. Let's read along here. Jesus, in verse 6, he's still thinking about the context of little children, because even as we read on down through verse 10, he's going to talk about little children, these little ones he's referring to. So perhaps this child is still here. Maybe Jesus is beckoning to the child over there, but he goes on and continues the idea of what we can learn from little children and what we should think about. Seriously, he says, this is some of his harshest words that he ever speaks. He says, whoever shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, though maybe he's talking still of these little children, maybe he's thinking of those who are young in the faith now, those which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea. Woe unto the world because of offenses. It must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that by whom the offense come. Wherefore for thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. Better for thee to enter into life halt or maimed, rather than having two hands or two feet to be cast in everlasting fire. And if thy eye offend thee, pluck it out and cast it from thee. Better for thee to enter into life with one eye, rather than having two eyes to be cast into hellfire. Take heed that you despise not one of these little ones. For I say unto you that in heaven are angels, who always behold the face of my Father, which is in heaven. Jesus is continuing to talk to his disciples here, and he says, stop worrying about who's the greatest and start caring about the little people in your life. See these little ones here? Jesus is looking at this little child and he says, be very careful how you respond to these little ones. And then some of his harshest words, that if we offend some of these little ones, if we respond to them in such a way which causes their hearts to grow cold towards God and to leave the faith and the kingdom, he says, a very serious thing. And we are called to take drastic action. We all have offenses, but then we tend to internalize them. We've all had people say things to us and we thought, how can you say this? What do you mean by that? Where did that come from? And we begin to think about them. We internalize them and we talk about our day and we start to live with this level of pain. And then, over time, what happens is, as we are trying to wrestle through that, the little children begin to bear the brunt of that. The offended us becomes the offender. The victim us becomes the victimizer. The one who has taken pain becomes the pain giver. And typically, the ones where that happens, it's the little ones among us. It's our children, right? The ones that are closest to us. And is that when we realize that the pain that we experience in our hearts is starting to spill out in unkind ways, offensive ways, to those little ones around us, he said it's time to take drastic action. In fact, it's better if you were not even born, because the most better one around your neck, you were drowned in death to the feast that Jesus says, and no time to take drastic action. Our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. So Jesus is not advocating bodily mutilation. He's not expecting us to take him literally here and we chop our hands off. But he's using exaggeration to help us understand that, as was said many years ago, drastic times require drastic measures. When there's things in your life that are going well, we're not supposed to just knuckle down through and act like we're okay and come to church and smile at everyone. We're supposed to stop what we're doing, hit the reset button, and take some drastic measures to say, you know what? He's causing lots of problems for the people around me that look to me for leadership, my children, and I need to change this. Jesus says in verse 10, take heed that you despise not these little ones. Let them be that in heaven there are angels who always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. I don't know that there's many other verses about this, so I'm not quite sure. You know exactly what this is referring to, but remember the day of Job when the angels, the Son of God, said, David presented himself before the Lord. There was some kind of heavenly council there. And it says Satan came off from among them. Remember that? There was kind of a meeting there. And I wonder if those types of meetings still happen. It says there are angels. We get this idea. Angels that are walking here after our children. They're here to still meet occasionally with God. And God says, you know, how's their family doing? And the angel needs to give an account for these children. Saying, well, it's all the goal. A place of peace and joy. They have shortcomings, but they're quick to apologize and they're they're humble with each other and they're seeking you, and by your grace, they're doing the best they can. Lord, if anyone does ever need to report something, we have a message. And the sooner we get help, the better. Years ago, next week, I was and the eggs would come out. You know, they go in the two packing machines, and some of you may have done this. My daughter, they're flats. The eggs, the machines put them on the flats, and then they can come up the belt and stack up the flats and put them in the floor. But the problem with my daughter is stacking up the flats, but also watch out what's happening, because occasionally, it's not kind of glitch. Machine wouldn't advance until it was trying to put eggs on top of the machine floor. For some reason, it didn't feed a flat in, and the machine didn't recognize it. And the sooner things were going wrong, the sooner that you better stop and take care of it, or pretty soon you'll be You know, we're working with children, right? And children are really fragile. Now, in other ways, they're very resilient. We know that as well. But you know, they're picking up many, many things. And what messages are we sending to them? And when we realize that the messages that we're sending to them are not the good news of the kingdom of God, it's time to stop and hit the reset button. The longer we wait, the bigger message will happen. Whatever is in my heart is going to transfer to those closest to me. Or do they find it out like, my own business? Or am I just all fun? And then again, you're out, and then we're not learning much. What do I bring? What is in our hearts transfers out. And there are some days that I don't feel like these some days I'm not very passionate about the lesson. And I don't seem to pay attention as well sometimes. And I realize, you know what? I'm not very passionate about it. No wonder they're not here. Sometimes, and they're absorbing, right? And they're playing their trucks and they're playing their babies. They have a swap of their little children. And then sometimes with children, there's these children playing, and one little children come in the room, right? And they grab children's toys and they throw them into the room and into the floor. Why do some children just have this angst and this, and something's going on? Just pick that up somewhere. They're gathering that from there. They're gathering that from their situations. So what are we transferring to those around us? When I walk into the room, what do I bring? Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 8 and 9, he says that I will lifting up holy hands or half half. Now I like the posture that is symbolized there. That we should pray lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting. You know, brothers, just have to posture which we live our lives. If I want to enter my school classroom every day like this, and some of you, you've been to school, and you might have teachers that come and they just weren't very approachable. You didn't really appreciate your teachers, right? And you just weren't trained, fifth grade, and you were happy when those years were over. Yep. So, maybe some names come to mind. How's the posture of our lives? How are we doing that? Have I been offended, and how am I responding to those offenses? Am I humble? Have I been offended? Number three, am I fighting against God? For the Son of Man has come to save that which was lost. How think ye? If a man have 100 sheep, and one of them be gone astray, does he not leave the 99 and go into the mountains and seek that which is gone astray? If so be he find it, verily I say to you, he rejoices more over that sheep than of the 99 which went not astray. Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. By living with offenses, with the spirit of pride, we can be sure that God is great and God is pursuing. And by responding to the pursuing hand of God in my life, There's circumstances that God might be using to pursue me, and I'm responding to that. Am I opening my life up to His pursuit, or am I fighting against God? That's the question. Am I fighting against God? What should I do when I'm offended? I should seek to resolve it. Why humble myself? Why does it really matter? Well, because it transfers to those around us. The heart of Jesus for us is to pursue us. The heart of Jesus for us is that we become known in such a way that we would become His agents in pursuing those around us. It's Jesus' desire that we would be reconciled with Him. And then if He has sheep which are astray, that He would use us to go and reconcile those sheep. Sometimes those are our children. Maybe sometimes that's your spouse. And God wants to use you to reach out and reconcile your children to Him. But if you're not yet reconciled to Him, you're not going to be able to do that. I'm not going to be able to do that. He cares. Jesus cares immensely about the sheep that have fallen astray. He cares about injustices. He cares about the lost sheep. And if I live as babies, and I live as to the kind directions, may not always seem so kind, of the brotherhood and of the circumstances God is bringing in my life, I'm fighting against God. And there's no way that I can actively be His agent caring for others. Why would a shepherd? Why would a shepherd go looking for a lost sheep? Because he loves us. We are called to model that care. At the end of the day, if you come see the lost with your child in there, it doesn't need to be the end of the day. But we're called to be the agent of Jesus Christ to go pursue our children, pursue our spouse. What's wrong? Is there something wrong here? But if we are so focused internally on our own issues, we're going to miss what's happening around us. The tape that's playing in my mind has so much stuff going on that I'm missing what's happening right in front of me and the care that's needed for these little sheep that are going astray. Be connected to someone or something. And it's God's desire when we're young that they be connected to us as parents. And they grow older, you know, how they grow up, they get on the friends, they find their connection. But their connection with us as parents prepares them to be healthily connected with others and ultimately with the Lord. How are we doing? Are we invitational just as Jesus is? Are we pursuing just as Jesus is? Or are we driving people way of. Jesus said, take heed. Take heed that you despise not what we do. Children are not inconvenience to your life. Children are our life mission. Children are what God has called us to, if God has granted you. They are the heritage of the Lord. Am I still focused? Or am I not focused? Question number 4. Do I want to reconcile with the Lord? No, it would take probably a long time to unpack how to reconcile with some people who have hurt us. Sometimes the offenses are really, really deep. But a good way to start is to reconcile with the Lord. There's a process here. Let's just read 15 to 20. And this is a familiar process to us, I'm sure. Moreover, if thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained that brother. But if he will not hear, take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. If he shall neglect to hear thee, tell him unto the church. But if he neglect to hear the church, let him be only as an even man and a publican. Verily I say unto you, whatsoever you shall bind on earth shall be bound in heaven, and whatsoever you shall loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. Again I say unto you that if two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be not for them of my Father which is in heaven. For where two or three are gathered together in my name, there am I in the midst of them. Jesus gives us a very practical, straightforward process. Seek to resolve. Now I understand. Sometimes the offenses happened many years ago. Sometimes the person's no longer living. Sometimes the person has no desire to reconcile. Sometimes the person doesn't think they did anything wrong. And you get the idea that it can turn out to be very complex. But it's a process which starts with the humility in our own hearts. It's the process to know this Jesus who can heal us from the inside. It's a process with us trying to think of ourselves as others better than ourselves. We are really human. do I really want healing? Where am I brought it along? And then if you won't listen, I'll take one or two more. If you won't listen, I'll take it to the church. And then it needs to go past that to excommunication. Do I really want healing? What about this? Not possible. You know, I can take my wall down, but what if my brother or sister want to take their wall down? And what are we going to do? What if this is a situation which can't seem to find you a
boy? Well, I do. It's so complex.
And the people in my life don't seem to understand. Oh, it's so private and so I'm not going to bring it to the church. There's many such scenarios we can get into. What will I do? Well, number one, come to Jesus. Isaiah 61. We have to come to Jesus. We have to open our hearts to Him. John 8:32, Jesus says, the verse I trust, we also have memorized, Jesus said, you should know the truth. And the truth shall make you free. Truth is becoming a very hard to, not commodity. The truth is becoming something that's hard to come by. And we cannot be that way in the church. The truth sets us free. When mercy and truth and equity is first. It's true that at times truth has been used without mercy, it's been used without love. And people have become afraid of the truth. They don't want the truth. The truth, when it comes from the Lord Jesus Christ and from His Word, when it comes from a heart of love, a brother or sister coming to us, truth is always our friend. Hold on.
I watched it happen.
I'm sure you watched it too. Running from truth. Running from people that love us. Never ends. He just brings people into our life to try to care for us, to try to bless us. And it's hard. But we need to slowly, by the grace of God, begin to open our hearts to Jesus. Open our hearts to people that care. Some wives have a very loving husband. Years of living together married, they still can't find it in their heart. There's so many things going on in there. There's so much pain, there's so much fear. Fear is always behind it. Fear is a powerful motivator. Fear is always behind it. But as God says, there's no fear in love. Open your heart to the people. And tell the truth. And hurt the people, but we must learn to tell the truth. This is what happened. Jesus, please heal me. Told me to stand up front and tell the church the truth, but there has to be someone in your life. You have to start with the Lord, there has to be someone that you can begin slowly to crack that door open. Tell the truth. Come to Jesus. Tell the truth. Another thing that I think is so important, there's many things we can talk about. Some things that I was thinking about in the context of some of the situations lately, and that is, next thing is, stop being a victim. Stop being a victim. And depending on what you experience, you've been a victim. And there's many different scenarios. If someone says, in a simple scenario, if somebody says something unkind to you, and it's not just, it's not justified in his judgment motives, you're a victim. But we need to stop the victim mentality. I was dealing over the last year laying upon my heart some sermons about self-pity. And I was thinking about self-pity, began seeing that in my own life, began to see that there's very little room in the scriptures for self-pity. Because Jesus offers us freedom from the victim mentality. We can change by the power of His Spirit. We can change because of the grace that He gives us. He being the victim, I'm the victim, for me, that really short circuit the healing process. If I think I'm a victim, you know, there's only one person you can relate to who is, you can raise your hand up for that. There's only one person you can relate to that more than anyone. But it might be you. But obviously we can't really, probably can't handle that. But it's probably not us. So life is hard. Life is hard. Am I going to be a victim or am I going to find healing in Christ? Adam was a victim. This is a real problem for the next 6,000 years. Adam and Eve, right? What does Adam do with his victim mentality? He blames Eve. He doesn't only blame Eve, he blames God. This woman that you gave me, now wait a minute, Adam. This is the best thing in the world. Just a little bit ago, 24 hours ago, and now, a couple hours later, are you blaming God for this woman? Adam, I think we need to stop a little bit here and think about what you're doing. So this is something that's kind of wired into us with this demonic nature that we all possess. But I know the things that have happened to us, we're not trying to excuse those things. We're not trying to say that those things were easier, that they should have happened. We're not saying that. But let me just share a little biblical illustration. King Ahab. Remember King Ahab? He's the king of Israel. You would expect someone who's king to have a little of responsibility and authority. Remember the story of Naboth? So Naboth, can you give me my answer? Naboth says, no. And he goes home, and when he does, he lays down on his bed, and he looks at the wall, and his wife comes to him and says, honey, dear, someone prayed, and he says, I'm not going to eat. Why? And Naboth's vineyards. She says, oh dear, it'll be alright, you know. And you go, and I'll find a way to get you Naboth's vineyard in a minute. And he gets up and eats supper. The next day, or whenever they call a town meeting, and they spend Naboth, and they have gifts for you. Your life is good, right? So, you know, Ahab couldn't say, well, then Elijah comes to me, right? And he goes to claim his vineyard. Elijah, this man who show up at the worst time of the day, right? And so, what does he say to Elijah? He said, you know, maybe I could have a vineyard, but, you know, Elijah, I experienced my father came up, and he didn't spend a lot of time with me, and so, and Elijah said, yeah, you're right. I know you've experienced a lot of time. So we need to be careful about allowing the things that we've experienced, which are sometimes extremely difficult, about allowing those things to become excuses whereby then it's okay to start offending the little ones. It's not okay to act like a victim when Jesus is offering healing, when he's pursuing us. It's not okay to say I'm a victim. I've heard this victim mentality sometimes sounds so spiritual, such spiritual veneer on. You know? Oh, you know, the other dads in the youth group, I don't know what they're doing because my children never treat someone like that. The way they treated my children, you know, those dads, well, you know, the way they treated my children never act like that. My children watch their movies, you know. Well, that's good, but the victim mentality. Let's be careful with that idea that I have harder than anyone else. Why does that feel good? Why does that feel good? Because well, this idea we'll talk more about tomorrow night when we talk about evaluating the culture in my home. This idea of men being passive goes back to God. And it's a real problem. And why men are tempted to do that? Well, kind of, yeah, if we're all it kind of kicks the women in our life in gear. Oh, really? Okay, well, can I make you a cup of coffee? What can I do? It worked great for Ahab. And yet that's not what God is calling us as men to do. And so why do we like to be a victim? Well, sometimes it kind of gets us a little more attention, gets us a little more care. But it doesn't help us be good parents. It doesn't help us be good leaders. It doesn't help us to show Jesus to the people in our lives. I'd like to read you a little poem. I met a brother this past winter, an Amish man from Missouri. And just saw him a couple of days. We were in Florida and met him. And I was so blessed. He's a single man. He was married. His wife passed away. And he seemed to be a very humble man. And so I don't know if you want his name shared or not. But so I'm just going to read you a poem to you that he wrote. And this poem to me just... He said it so well, and it's two columns, and the first column is going to talk about victim mentality, and he's going to switch gears, and I think you'll hear it, I think you'll hear it, you'll understand this. And he's going to mention, at the beginning of this poem, he's going to mention some heart-wrenching things, which are not just theoretical, but they're things that he actually experienced, at least in the first couple of stanzas here. This is what he says. The poem is Happy Marriage. Have you ever stood with your siblings and cried and cried? On the morning after your mother committed suicide? Have you ever held your partner as they took their last breath and watched them close their eyes in the final silent death? Have you ever fully trusted someone only to be betrayed or suffered deep heartaches from children who have strayed. Have you ever had your heart simply broken in two by the one who is kindest and always loved you? Have you ever had sadness to be your only expression as you sank down deep in the pit of depression? Have you ever felt the troubles were bigger than God and the road of infinity looked impossible to draw? Have you ever experienced so much emotional pain that you understood the vanity of all earthly gain? Have you ever estimated the cost of sins tied whole, with the whole world worth less than even one soul? Have you ever had someone become impatient with you and then lose their temper? Have you ever seen someone denying real facts in an effort to cover up their own sin lacks? Have you ever been criticized and falsely accused or asked to be forgiven or refused? Have you ever been so low that you wished to die and had no one talk to you or heard you cry? May switches a little bit. Instead of change. Have you ever tried to leave the sin you're avoiding within? Or meet the bitter heart when it's sown in sin? Try to screen or give you a holy Bible and you do not want you to become his disciple. Have you ever thanked God for all of the trials in this journey through your life for so many miles? Have you ever realized that a good place to start to make your life better is your very own heart? Have you ever confessed your own sins and wept bitterly for all the times you should have done differently? Have you ever accepted the best thing you can do is to forgive everyone who has ever sinned against you? Have you ever studied how Christ defeated temptation and did not try to protect his own reputation? Have you ever wondered how Christ could be so meek and when he struck, he turned to liberty? Have you ever let the mind of Christ be in you and follow his example in all your sin and do? Have you ever take a huge loss and gladly accept it as bearing your own cross? Have you ever loved God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and also loved the ones who have been so unkind? Have you ever imagined how beautiful heaven will be if we overcome sin and gain eternal wisdom? You can't go from the first part of the poem to the second part of the poem without it. And I don't really have a nice passage as to how to go from one side to the other. How do you get over that hump of forgiveness when someone has hurt you so badly and come to the place it's only through Jesus? So we commend you to Jesus this evening and to his grace and to his good news. It's really good news. Other than that, there are many things perhaps you can say that he is really. He's an early answer. Briefly, yet, Jesus should only tell a parable about forgiveness. You know, that's a huge topic. We can entire sermon perhaps or two on forgiveness, but forgiveness cures many problems. Forgiveness does not say, okay, it's okay, everybody is fine, but forgiveness does not say that. Forgiveness is releasing the offense to God, allowing God to carry the message to him, it's dropping the lock. There was a quote from T.S. Lewis, and I think everybody thinks, I can't wait, I can't wait to be happy, but everybody thinks forgiveness is such a good idea until they have somebody to forgive. And somebody had printed out a poster at school and a picture of a man holding a rock, talking about the front of you. I just want to hold on to that rock. Like he hit somebody. Forgiveness is hard through the grace of Jesus Christ. It can be a journey. It is a journey. We can forgive repeatedly again and again when those offenses come back to mind. Finally, the last question that I want to leave with you this evening is, am I broken? The psalmist David realized that what God really wants, the sacrifices God is looking for, is a broken and a contrite heart. Broken and a contrite heart of God, thou wilt not despise. God received many, many, many thousands of sacrifices in the Old Testament. David said, what God really wants is a broken and a contrite heart. We are pretty good at offering God sacrifices. We already did some this evening. We came and offered the sacrifice of praise. We sang songs. And we're sacrificing something else tonight by being here. Probably have the opportunity at the end of the week or week for Sunday to put some money in the offering basket, perhaps. They're able to do that here. You know, so we offer sacrifices, but the sacrifice God really wants For the whole David said, a man who is all of God's heart. Really looking for our hearts to be broken, contrite. You can have a horse that's not broken, and then it's broken. It's just as strong as it ever was. But before it's broken, it's dangerous. After it's broken, it's useful. God is with people. Unbroken people are dangerous. Unbroken people will split the nations. Unbroken people will drive children away from the Lord. But broken people are useful. They will represent us in the hands of God. And they'll bring healing to the churches. They'll bring healing to families. It's our choice. Broken or unbroken. What do we want to be? David says God's looking for contrite hearts. Contrite heart is a heart where the walls have come down. You've all tried to, maybe for perhaps, I hope not all of you, but perhaps some of you have tried to reconcile some walls away by it's just impossible. I've talked with people trying to resolve offenses, and they're almost illogical when they're responding. There's such a stubbornness there, and such a desire to, and there's such a pain in their hearts. God's looking for broken, contrite hearts. What will it be with us? Jesus said, Matthew 21:44. Whoever shall fall on this stone, speaking of himself, the stone which the builders rejected, the same thing. Whoever shall fall on this stone shall be broken. Well, whosoever shall fall, it will grind him to powder. We have a choice. We have a choice to fall on Jesus and be broken and start a fresh new with him, or to someday have this stone of Jesus fall on us forever. Us tonight. If I'm not at peace with God, if I'm living with the idea of who is the greatest, I think I'm the greatest. If I'm living with offenses and I'm living looking out for me, I'm going to be someone who creates God. Now, some people are very quick to be offended. Why are some people so quick to be offended? Why do some people seem to have so much drama surrounding their life? You know, well, have you ever gone swimming? And I've not enjoyed swimming. I learned to enjoy swimming a little more as a children. But I never was a very good swimmer. But I can get pretty anxious in water fairly quickly. You know, because I just don't enjoy swimming. I like to stay at home more. And, you know, if you have water down up to here, you know, you can't do too much stress. You know, some people have so much going on inside their hearts that inside their lives, the water levels are not right here. You know, any little thing that's kind of pushes them on their head, struggle. And so, when you see that happening to you or to people around you, don't push on the let's learn to understand that when we see that happening, somebody's lashing out and we say, that's not right. Would this not go and yet, if that's us, we have a responsibility. We need to open our lives, raise a fear of us, be willing, and still working on some of these things that can come to the place of rest in our hearts. Matthew 7:21-23. Jesus said, There's people like in heaven, and Jesus says, depart from me, I never knew you. But he doesn't give these words to us so that we live in fear or anxiety. He gives these words to us to draw us to him. Apparently, some people are going to get the judgment or heaven, or however you want to think about this here. And they're going to look back at all the things they tried to do for the Lord, and Jesus is going to say, I never knew you. These are people who play religion. They look good. That they never came into submission and relationship with Jesus Christ. They never fell on that stone and were broken. They had things to hold on to. They had things to prove. and agendas to live by, and they had things to hold on to until finally Jesus says, I'm going to do you. And so that doesn't need to be us. The invitation is clear. The good news is clear. Jesus has come to preach the good news of the kingdom, and I trust.
I hope.
Pray. That we are those who are here tonight. The gospel has impacted our lives. And it is changing us. And it is changing our homes. And it is changing our churches. And I trust it's changing our community. Thank you for your kind attention. Tomorrow evening, we're going to look at the book of Amos. And I want to look at what is the culture in my home? What is the culture in my home? At this time, turn the time over back over to